Welcome to the Jag Bros Podcast. We are three brothers, JT, Joey, and me, Jack, and we are diehard Jags fans, and we are getting pumped up for the season, just a few weeks away from preseason. JT, are you getting your caps lock ready for your Facebook post and fired up for the Jaguars?
You know it. Every single week that we approach the season, I think I'm going to get more and more excited and probably less and less rational. So it should be great.
The sky is the moon. So if you missed that, that was episode 3. Make sure you check that out. That was our most recent episode. And then Joey, we're getting ready. We're here in Dallas and we're going to go to one of the Jaguars preseason games in Dallas. Joey, you fired up for that game?
I'm very excited. Already buying the tickets. We're getting first row, trying to see those new rookies play and some of the backups and see where we're at. And I'm very excited to see where we are performing.
For sure. Well, summer is wrapping up. Hopefully we'll get some cooler weathers. We are just a few weeks away again from the preseason, less than 50 days away from the Jaguars regular season kickoff. And in today's episode, what we want to cover is some fantasy football. We know a lot of people are getting ready for their drafts, getting prepared. Joey's going to give us a breakdown of some of the key Jaguars fantasy football guys. We're going to continue our position breakdowns, covering wide receivers and tight ends. And then the big section is we want to break down the AFC South, who are potential threats to the Jaguars, who are some of the easier matchups that the Jaguars will see this season. But I'm going to pass it over to you, Joey. This is a new segment. You're going to give us some insight on fantasy football, help people prepare for their fantasy football draft.
And I'm going to start off with the quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence, an absolute top starting number one quarterback. He's going around the second grouping of quarterbacks I've seen in drafts. Kind of that first grouping, you see Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, some of those dual threat quarterbacks and those super high explosive offenses. And then the second grouping is where Trevor Lawrence is. What do y'all think about Trevor being in the second grouping? Do you have him high in your second grouping, or would you have him towards the end of it?
Well, fantasy is tricky because so much of it's the ability to run, get rushing yards, rushing touchdowns. But it's interesting, too, because that would be a major step up if you're thinking about fantasy football in tiers. I feel like Trevor was probably in the fourth tier, maybe even fifth tier in some drafts last year. And so I think we're continuing to project what we saw in December, which, look, I mean, the mold is you hope he becomes like a Joe Burrow in the NFL. If he can start to put up those numbers primarily from a passing, consistently getting 250 to 300 plus, occasionally 400 yards and two touchdowns, then yeah, I think he would certainly be a steal there in the second grouping.
Yeah, I mean, he's got so many weapons around him now with Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, Evan Ingram, Travis Etienne. He can throw it to him. Like, there's just so many places that Trevor can go with the ball. He's throwing it incredibly well right now. And he is a little bit of a dual threat quarterback. I mean, he's no slouch when it comes to running.
Oh, he has the ability to run just like Burrow does. So like he's not going to rack up as much as Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson or Jalen Hurts, but he could have 100, 200 yards rushing.
Definitely. What do you think, Jack?
Yeah, I agree. I think that we could see a pretty strong year overall. We, in fact, did a couple episodes ago, a QB ranking and where we put Trevor Lawrence. And I see him pretty standard with everyone else right now of 6 through 8. With the potential, to your point, Joey, of just all the weapons that have been added, a lot of young guys too. Again, hopefully you're hoping that they take the next step. Christian Kirk is 26 years old. You hope he takes a big step. Ridley, even though he's 28, hasn't played in nearly 2 years. You hope he takes a monster step, looks really fast, looks really quick. And it's really going to be about, for fantasy, it's about touchdowns. And so can Lawrence get the ball in the end zone more than he's done the last 2 years? I say definitely yes. I think this is going to be a high scoring offense, which naturally rising tide raises all boats. And I think you'll see that in fantasy for Trevor.
Definitely. And talking about touchdowns, the person that I think Trevor's going to be throwing it to for those touchdowns is Calvin Ridley. I think he's going to be steal at a number one wide receiver. A lot of people aren't super high on him because he hasn't played in about a year and a half, 2 years. But I have him scoring a lot of touchdowns because he's a very precise runner. He's very quick and he gets open. And I think Trevor's going to be looking for him in the end zone. I have him at the end of the year, a top 10 fantasy football wide receiver. And that's why I have him. Where do you have him?
Ridley's a tough one. Obviously, as you just pointed out, Joe, you know, he hasn't played in 2 years. What's interesting, of course, is before that, he's coming off in 2020, a record season, 90 catches, 1,300 plus yards, 9 touchdowns. I think, number one, he's just going to add a huge threat to the Jaguars offense. Everyone has been, I know you're saying, which is so true, everyone outside the league has been down on Ridley, like, oh, he hasn't played in 2 years. But the Jaguars as a whole, Jaguars Twitter, social media, we are so high on him. And so I do think we're going to see a big year. I think we see another year like he had in 2020 of 1,300 plus yards, hopefully double-digit touchdowns, big year.
In a contract year, and he's been working his butt off over the last, especially 12 months since becoming a Jaguar in the offseason. So I know they've been really excited to see him on the field.
Oh, yeah. He's so excited. The coaches have to slow him down because he's so excited to get back on the field. And then the next wide receiver, Christian Kirk, I think he's a very good wide receiver 2/flex. I think he's going to get a lot of yardage and a lot of completions. I think he's going to hit the middle of the field a lot. As a slot wide receiver, Zay Jones and Calvin Ridley will pull off some of those cornerbacks. And so he'll be going up against linebackers and like a nickel cornerback. And I think he can blow past them and he's just going to rack up on these yardage. I think he's going to get like 120 yards, 110 yards and like 8 completions. I don't think he's going to score as many touchdowns, but he's going to be one of those players that just gets a ton of yards. Someone who's going to get a lot of yards, but not a lot of touchdowns, Travis Etienne. I'm not as high on him. I think a lot of people on the outside of the Jaguars think that he's going to be a very good running back. And I think he is going to be a very good running back, but he's had issues of getting in the end zone last year. He only had 5 touchdowns. I don't see him getting that many more this year, especially now that he has to share the backfield with Tank Bigsby, Dearness Johnson, Hasty. I mean, there's just so many handoffs to only go around. And Travis, I think, will get a lot of yardage, but not a lot of touchdowns. And those touchdowns are big in fantasy football for running backs. And I just, like, I have him as a slot, maybe flex running back, but not as a starting running back.
Yeah, Joey, I think you're spot on there. And it's so interesting because watching that Chiefs game in the playoffs, we really didn't have Etienne on the field a lot, and he looked pretty productive, especially in the first half. So I'm not really sure if there's an injury concern, if the coaches just like the personnel matchup better for some reason against Kansas City. But I do think that this coaching staff is not quite as married to Etienne as maybe some from the outside would expect. And then to your point, I don't really see him getting a lot of the goal line carries inside the 5. So that means you're going to be banking on the fact that Etienne's ripping off some big runs, which he has the ability to do that. But I think he's going to be a much more inconsistent player, and he's not going to be getting the same volume that he got in 2022.
Here's a wrinkle why I would probably actually draft Etienne. It sounds like higher than both of y'all. It's just because the running back market is weird. As of the time of us recording, you've got several of these big name guys, Cook, Zeke, that are still not signed. You've got several of these guys holding out, and Barkley and Josh Jacobs. And so maybe a little bit by default, a safer route is going to be Etienne, especially because I agree that I think the backfield is going to get more and more crowded throughout the season. But especially at the beginning of the year, I think you'll still see Etienne carry a lot of carries. You'll see him make some catches out of the backfield. And I think they'll slowly get Tank more and more involved. So especially the first half of the year, he's probably a safe, solid pick for fantasy.
Definitely. I think he's going to start off hot, and then we'll see kind of how he rolls. And another very solid Jag pickup is Brandon McManus. I think he's a great starting kicker for your fantasy team. I think that he's going to have a lot of long range effort that we weren't able to do last year with our kicker. And then we're going to be scoring a lot more touchdowns. So I think he's going to get a lot of PATs. And so with a lot of those 50-yard kicks and PATs to add on top of it, I think he's going to be a very, very good fantasy kicker.
Yeah, it's so refreshing being able to talk about five or six startable fantasy options, because it felt like for years our only startable guy might have been Josh Scobie, maybe Blake Bortles if you're hoping for garbage time touchdowns and you're already down by 30 to the opposing team. So it is certainly refreshing in that perspective.
And then the last guy for the Jaguars, I think, is the biggest steal. A lot of people aren't that high on him, which I don't understand. It's Evan Engram. I think he will be a great starting tight end. I mean, he's already almost a wide receiver slash tight end. I think he's going to have a lot of yards. I think he may go for 1,000 yards this year. I think he's going to have a lot of chances for touchdowns with the cornerbacks all over the three big wide receivers that we have. I think he's going to be open. I think he's going to have a lot of chances. And I see him as a top five tight end in fantasy points this year. I don't see any downside to Evan Engram.
Wow, 1,000 yards. That's going to put him in some rarefied air. I think Kittle and Andrews and Kelsey may be about the only people that have done that over the last 3 or 4 years. So that would be quite an achievement. In fact, I think there was a Madden list that came out either today or yesterday that ranked the tight ends. Where do they have him again?
Yeah. So the Madden rankings came out with their overall scores, and they had Evan Engram at number 10, an 84 ranking overall. I'm telling you, everyone besides the Jaguars is sleeping on Evan Engram. I'm not really sure why. I mean, I understand he didn't have the greatest career at the Giants, but his year last year was just too good for people to ignore. At number one, obviously, they have Travis Kelce. At number two, they have George Kittle. Number three, Mark Andrews. Four, TJ Hockenson. And then five, Dallas Goedert. Then they had a bunch of others, but I have Evan Engram number five. I have him right
behind TJ Hockenson.
No. I actually am not as high on TJ Hockenson as everyone else is. I don't know what people are smoking. I mean, he's a fine tight end, kind of mid, but he's not a top five tight end. Are you kidding me? He's never even got more than 700 yards as a tight end. It makes no sense to me.
Ever since getting traded to the Vikings, he really, I mean, I think he was on pace to be wide
mid-season.
Yes, but like, I mean, okay.
He has less performed than Evan Engram, yet he somehow is higher.
I don't necessarily think he's less performed. He's definitely not less performed than Engram. Engram had one good rookie season as the Giants, and then he played horrible, well underperformed his expectations for the next few years. The Jaguars pick him up. He had an awesome year. And oh, by the way, as soon as the Vikings picked up TJ Hockenson, he turned out to be one of Kirk Cousins' favorite targets. So like, I'm fine with putting him in the 4-5 range. I agree with you, Joey. I think Evan Engram should be right there on the 4-5 range. But I wouldn't be surprised if Darren Waller also, I probably would be putting him above both of TJ Hockenson and Evan Engram, simply because the Giants have no wide receivers to throw the ball to. And Daniel Jones clearly took a step forward last year. And so if he's going to continue to be playing at this level, I think Darren Waller is going to see a lot of targets. So
yeah, right. I mean, right now, I agree with you, JT. I have Darren Waller at 8, but I believe after this year, he's going to jump quite a few spots, maybe up to a 6 or a 5. I don't think they used him very well at the Raiders, and I think the Giants are going to throw it to him a lot more, utilize him a lot better. I do think he is going to grow in this ranking just right now. I just don't have him that high yet.
All right, I want to jump in here because I am totally on Joey's side on this. I am pro Engram. I think he's going to have a huge year. I was so excited that we already signed him for a long-term deal that I think was a win-win deal. Both sides, if you missed the news, it was 3 years for $41.2 million. I think that was a great deal for Engram. You can see on social media, he's fired up. He is excited to be back with the Jaguars, but I would have him as high as 4. You certainly, of course, Travis Kelce's number one, Andrews and Kittle are in a league of their own as well. But I would say Engram is knocking on that door. Listen to some of these numbers at the end of the year. Week 13, 11 catches, 162 yards, two touchdowns. Week 14, eight catches, 62 yards. Week 15, seven catches, 113 yards. He got better and better as the season went on, as Trevor Lawrence progressed. And a young quarterback, you see this all throughout the league, they love that tight end position. Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews, obviously Mahomes and Kelsey. A tight end is a young quarterback's best friend. And I think Ingram, I am so pro Joey. I think 1,000 yards, it's going to be a big year for Ingram.
I mean, look at every successful quarterback. Tom Brady had Gronk. Drew Brees had Jimmy Graham. Philip Rivers had Antonio Gates. I mean, every successful quarterback has a great tight end, and I think Evan Ingram is about to shoot up there with Trevor Lawrence, and they're going to make a name for themselves. Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it just goes together, and I think this is the year where they separate themselves.
Look, I'm not trying to be negative here. I still have him in my top five or six as well. And at the end of the day, I love the long-term signing of Evan Ingram. I think tight end is one of those positions that is extremely hard to get right for the NFL. And it's really hard to draft as well. I know we spent a early round draft pick on a tight end and remains to be seen on what his ceiling could be. But locking in a guy who has at least top four, top three type of potential is massive for us. And I think that's a pretty good transition to our next position groups. So last podcast, we spoke in depth around the front seven. So the linebackers, as well as the defensive line. And then we also talked a little bit about the offensive line, who the starters would be, where we potentially see people being able to take the next step. Today, we're going to talk more in depth about the wide receiving room and the tight end room. So we talked a little bit about Evan Ingram, and his potential, but let's pick up the conversation again with the wide receivers. So last year, from a receiving perspective, Christian Kirk led our team with 84 receptions, 1,100 yards, and eight touchdowns. It put him 13th in the NFL from a receiving yards perspective. It put him 18th from a reception. So kind of right there in that mid teens, which is pretty solid for a number one wide receiver. After Kirk was Zay Jones, who had 82 receptions, 800 yards, and five touchdowns. Evan Ingram, who we've already spoke about, in third with 73 receptions, 766 yards and four touchdowns. Marvin Jones, who obviously we will no longer have on our team in 2023, had a little over 500 yards and three touchdowns. And that was the core of our receiving core. So I guess we'll play a little bit of over under, guys. And so I know you guys have already thrown out Evan Ingram at 1,000 yards, but here's my question is, will we have at least one Jag receiver over 1,100 yards like what Kirk got this past year?
I have two of our wide receivers over 1,100 yards. I have Calvin Ridley and Christian Kirk both going for over 1,100 yards.
All right. So let's move that bar then a little bit. What about 1,200 yards? Do you have Kirk and Ridley over that as well?
I have Christian Kirk at 1,200 yards, and then I have Calvin Ridley over.
Okay. What about you, Jack?
I would go Kirk a little bit under 1,100. I hope he cracks 1,000, and then Ridley probably pretty close to 1,200. I'm just excited if all Joey's predictions come true with these receiving yards. Trevor Lawrence may throw for 5,000 yards this year.
He threw for 4,100 last year. So that would be a big step up if all of a sudden we have three guys over 1,000 yards, not to mention any other receiving things that ETN, the running backs get, or Zay Jones for that matter.
I know. Well, I think Calvin Ridley isn't a liar. I think he's going for 1,400 yards.
1,400 yards would certainly put him in rarefied air. A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams were all in that 1,500-yard range last year. Tyreek Hill and Jefferson. Jefferson had 1,800 receiving yards last year. That's just insane.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah, that's he's over, amazing. 99 on Madden. I think he goes for 2,000. If you look at his stats, too, here's what's crazy. I think he's 24. Each year, he's gotten better and better. And not even with a superstar quarterback either. Truly amazing.
I know. And that's also like people know about him. So, I mean, he's getting double teamed sometimes too. And yep, he's still getting all those yardage and catches.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right. So we got some pretty high numbers there from a yardage perspective. Let's go
what,
with
what about you, JT? Let's flip the tables. What do you got for our two star receivers, Kirk and Ridley?
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Jack. I think Kirk is going to go down, not because he doesn't have the talent to get 1,100 or 1,200 yards, but I think there's not enough balls to go around for this receiving room. I'm going to say Kirk finishes around 900. So a decent step down. I think Ridley is going to tap out around that 1,100 to 1,300 range. And then I would have Ingram. I think he will take a step forward. I think we unlocked some abilities from him toward the second half of last season, especially in the Tennessee game and on. Jack, you were reading some of those stats in week 13. So I think he's going to be around 900 as well. So maybe a little bit lower, but like I said at the beginning of the podcast, my rationale starts to go out the door as we get closer to the season. So ask me again in 5 weeks and it might be completely different.
It's going to be awesome to see, regardless of where these guys finish up. I think all of us are really high on overall the Jaguars passing offense. It's going to be towards the top of the league, which is pretty amazing. Again, I know we talk about this a lot, but we've been diehard Jags fans for a long time. This is rare territory for Jaguars, for Jags fans. So it's going to be fun to see what our wide receivers and tight ends do.
I love it. And so when you're thinking about the receiving core, it's been a long time since we've had a double-digit touchdown guy. And there's not that many. I mean, last year, there's only five folks that were able to put up those stats, two of which were tight ends. Do you see any of our guys being able to eclipse 10 touchdowns next year?
I only have Calvin Ridley as a double-digit touchdown guy. I think his precise route running and his speed will get him open. I think Trevor is going to be looking at him a lot, so I have him at double digits.
I don't know. I'm torn on this. I think Trevor spreads the love a lot here, and I could see us easily with Kirk finishing 8 or 9 touchdowns again. Ridley, again, even in that career year 2020, he had 9 touchdowns, and Ingram, of course, had 4 last year, which I think will go up. I could see all three of them finishing right around 7 to 9 touchdowns. Maybe one sneaks in with 10.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Jack. I think we do spread out the love a little bit. I mean, ETN didn't even have a receiving touchdown last year.
Wow, that's crazy.
Right, yeah. So I think there's, and even if you want to say, oh, well, I'd love to see Evan Ingram get 10. I mean, that's a massive jump from where he was this past year. He was certainly a weapon, but we didn't utilize him a ton inside the 10. Honestly, Zay Jones is still sleeping in the wings too. I mean, he was a big end zone target for Trevor, especially down the stretch. So I maybe Ridley, but I don't really see anybody else getting up that high. And so we've already spent some time talking about the tight end room with Evan Ingram. But I want to open it up to you guys. Any other comments on the rest of the tight end room or the rest of the receiver room? I know Parker Washington is a guy that some folks are high on with the draft pick this year. Tim Jones is another guy out there. We obviously drafted a pretty high draft pick too on Britton Strange. So any other comments on those guys?
Yeah, you just mentioned him. Guys, I need your help on this because I love everything about the Ingram long-term deal, except it makes me hate the Strange pick even more. To use a high overall pick, the end of the second round, to go get essentially what you're guaranteeing is a backup tight end for the next 3 years. To me, that's crazy. I don't know how you can't look back and say that's a D-, maybe even an F draft grade. Of course, I'm going to cheer for the guy, but that pick to me even now just makes less and less sense. So help me out. Get me off the edge.
I got you, Jack. I got you. Let me calm you down. Just because you have Evan Ingram doesn't mean that you can't run a 2 tight end set. I mean, right after the Eagles won the Super Bowl, they went out and got Dallas Goedert. Even when they had Zach Ertz, you always need to have that backup just in case Evan Ingram goes down, in case all of a sudden after a couple of years, he wants a ridiculous amount of money. Or you just need that second tight end to come in and get some of the pressure off. I think that he is actually a really good pickup, and maybe it's not as good as it was when it first happened, but I still think it's a super solid pick. I think he's still going to be used, maybe not quite as much, but nowhere near as off the edge as you are, Jack.
I'm going to be right in between for you guys. For honestly, I hate the pick. I think it's a complete waste of a second round pick to go with Strange there. Not to mention there was just a run on tight end. So we ended up getting like the fifth or sixth best tight end available. It's not like he was the second best option. So if I was drafting, I certainly would not have taken him in the second round. That being said,
Doug, we trust. He likes the two tight ends. I trust him all the way. He said he wanted Britton Strange from the beginning. I think
that's
y'all are wrong.
Everybody says. Doug, we trust. Fine. But like I was about to give you credit here, Joey, before you had to jump in. To your point, that the two tight end set is extremely popular in the NFL right now. I think a lot of advanced analytics talks about how that is one of the most efficient offensive formations when you have the two tight end set out there. It's a defensive nightmare from a matchup perspective, especially if both of them are good. I mean, you think about some of the early days with Gronk and Hernandez in New England. You think about what Philadelphia has done. There's a lot of folks that are attempting to be able to do that because tight end can be such a difference maker. I mean, I guess it's a dart throw, but I would have loved to have seen us go defense with that pick back then.
That helps a little bit. I'm a little bit further off the edge, but I'm still leaning over the edge here of, you know, I think if you had a home run pick for tight end, that would be great. But again, sure, he's going to see the field plenty of two tight end set, but you still can't get away from the field that he will 100%, if Ingram is on the field, be the backup tight end. And his numbers at Penn State are woeful. They're 300 something yards, 5 touchdowns. That's his best year at Penn State. I loved everything about the Ingram deal, and it just makes me even more frustrated that we reached so far to get Strange. I would have been fine with a pick at fourth round or fifth round. I'm trying to back away from the ledge. I will cheer for Britton Strange. I do like his nickname of Dr. Strange, but it has got me frustrated this week.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And so as we transition to the next portion of our podcast, we wanted to take a look at some of the competitors here in the AFC South. So obviously we're in the same division as the Texans, the Titans, and the Colts. And so if you're looking at the preseason win projections, Jaguars are predicted to win the division with 9.5 as their over under for their wins. Second is Tennessee at 7.5. Third is the Colts with a projection of 6.5 wins. And then finally, the Texans also at 6.5 wins as well. So, Jack, I'll turn it over to you for the Texans first. Talk to us a little bit about who we should be afraid of, what you think about this team after doing a little bit of analysis on them.
For sure. Texans 2022, for those who may have forgot, obviously towards the bottom of the league, they finished last year 3-13-1. In fact, their home record, this is painful for them. Sorry, any Texans fans listening right now. I'm sure there's not many, but 0-7 with one tie at home last year. We, of course, played them head-to-head last year twice. Week 5, we actually lost, which sucks, but Texans 13, Jaguars 6, our offense wasn't rolling, and we know it was a different team at the end of the year, because look at week 17, Jaguars 31, Texans 3, much better. So we'll play them, of course, twice this year. They had a big draft taking C.J. Stroud, number 2 overall, and then Will Anderson, a defensive end from Alabama. I like the future of both of these guys. I think the Texans are set up to be more of a contender. I actually am more afraid of them in 3 to 5 years. There's just not a whole lot that scares me right now. They did pick up Dalton Schultz, who's decent at tight end this offseason. They picked up one of our guys, Shaq Griffin, at defensive back. But honestly, I'm going to bet under on the Texans. I think they finish a little bit better than last year at 5 wins. And I think they finish at the bottom of the division. You guys have any thoughts on the Texans?
What's funny, I actually have them at 5 wins as well.
Yeah, I agree with your analysis. I think they could end up being a little bit better this year. I'm high on Damian Pierce. I'm high on some of their I think C.J. Stroud could have been the best quarterback in the draft. So it'll be interesting. But I really respect D'Amico Ryans as their coach. So I do think that they could outperform some expectations, but I mean, they're not a true contender in this division at this time.
No. And I think their biggest move was picking up Dalton Schultz. I think he is actually a great tight end. I think the Cowboys are wrong to have let him go. And I think that's going to be actually one of CJ Stroud's like main targets this year. Maybe it wasn't a great move for Dalton Schultz. I think he would have done better at the Cowboys, but I think that it was a good move for the Texans for sure.
Yeah, the question about the Texans this year is all going to be about quarterback. Does Stroud start? And I'm with you, JT. I thought he should have been the number one pick overall. He's my top quarterback of this past draft, but he's still a rookie. And we saw this with Trevor's rookie year. I think he would have a steep learning curve. Honestly, I would not be shocked at all if they don't start Davis Mills or even Case Keenum. And I actually would probably move my win total up a little bit if we saw Mills or Keenum start, just out of sheer experience. But again, I don't think they are a threat to the Jags. Hopefully, surely we will sweep them this season. We play them week 3 here at home, and then we'll play them again week 12 on the road in Houston. But let me turn it over to you, Joey, and give us your insight on the Indianapolis Colts here.
All righty. I can give you some insights on the Colts, and I don't think they are that much better. I have them at 6 wins this year. They have very young cornerbacks. One of the starting cornerbacks is a rookie this year. They've lost 2 players suspended and then cut for gambling. The Colts ranked right now in their defense is at 27th. This is something funny. They just picked up a Jaguar, and he was one of the biggest busts that the Jaguars have ever drafted. They picked up Tavon Bryan, and they have him as their number 3 defensive tackle, which is an absolute joke. I think he doesn't even deserve to be in the league, let alone like what are the Colts thinking? They lost Ngakoue, and they lost their number 1 cornerback and Gilmore. Like, they have a brand new coach, a brand new offensive coordinator. That was their only good move, was stealing Jim Bob Cooter from us. But other than that, I mean, I don't think they're going to be that hot. There are going to be a lot of stuff going on. They're going to be running a dual quarterback probably with Gardner Minshew and Anthony Richardson. We'll see them in the first round. I bet they start Gardner Minshew. I don't think Anthony Richardson is going to be anywhere near ready to start. I think they're going to give him a chance throughout the year, but I don't think he's going to perform. And so it's just going to be a big mixed bag between who's starting, who's not starting. It's just not going to ever be set in stone for them. And I mean, I think they maybe get 6 wins, but it could be even lower than that.
Yeah, here's the major question for the Colts is going to be Jonathan Taylor. Remember 2021, one of the top leading rushers, over 1,800 yards. And here's what's crazy. In 2020 run, his run yards per carry was 5.5 yards, which is crazy. I mean, you just run him. If you're getting 5.5 yards every play, obviously he was not at that level last year. Some question marks there. That is going to be how much of a threat the Colts are or not. It's going to be him. And then gotta love Jaguars legend Gardner Minshew. We'll see what he can do. We'll see how much of the year he starts and plays with the Colts drafting Anthony Richardson number 4 overall.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree, Joey, that it's going to be back and forth with Anthony Richardson and Minshew. Minshew may start game 1, but ultimately it's going to be Anthony Richardson, and they're going to give him every opportunity to succeed. You don't draft a guy in the top 4 and then just sit him on the bench if you're losing week after week after week. You're going to want to see how he performs. And I mean, there's a narrative where Anthony Richardson has an extremely high ceiling.
He has a high ceiling for sure.
Here's where you could be a little bit bullish for the Colts. At the end of the day, their coach came from Philadelphia as the offensive coordinator there, working with Jalen Hurts. Clearly, Jalen Hurts took the next step last year under him. And there's a lot of similarities between Anthony Richardson's game and Jalen Hurts. So
except Jalen Hurts was an actually established college quarterback, whereas Anthony Richardson was not.
Anthony Richardson's raw. And I mean, he's definitely going to have better coaching now than he had in Gainesville, coming from a Gator fan myself saying that. It's pretty clear he's going to have a better coaching opportunity. But I do agree with you. He's not the most accurate guy. And that's going to be a problematic when the windows are just that much smaller in the NFL to try to fit the ball into the receiver. So I'm not particularly high on them either. I think Anthony Richardson's going to see the field a lot, and he's going to be given at least every opportunity to succeed.
Which I do think is bad news for the Colts. Not because I am a seller on Richardson, but also think of the top three quarterbacks, he is clearly the most raw. And, you know, to people's credit, he does have the highest ceiling. Do I think he'll get there? Personally, no. But for this season, if you have a raw quarterback that's accuracy problems, that's a defense's best friend. Like, force him to throw the ball, and who knows how many turnovers we could see playing against the Colts.
It's yeah, and that brings us to the final team in the AFC South, the Tennessee Titans, who obviously has made a splash signing in the last couple of days, signing DeAndre Hopkins to a deal, which certainly bolsters their offensive production. And it's also leaving you a little bit of head scratching on, like, what exactly is Tennessee doing? Are they trying to rebuild? Are they trying to reload? Are they trying to put all their chips in to make a run in the next year or two? If I look at this team, I don't know if I've ever seen a wider array of potential outcomes for a NFL team than what the Titans have in front of them for 2023. So on the bullish side, if you're pretty optimistic about what they could do, last year they had the best run defense in the NFL, averaging giving up only 76 yards per game, well better than majority of the other top five run defenses, and a decent pass defense. And oh, by the way, the first 10 games of last year, they were 7-3 before they went on a 7-game losing streak. Tannehill was hurt. They, I think, were the second most NFL injured team during that stretch. And so there's a narrative where you can say, hey, Tannehill, Henry, and Hopkins is not really a bad trio at all for offense. And so you could see them back to where they were in 2019, 2020, and 2021, where they were fighting and clawing their way to somehow getting 10 to 12 wins. That's on the optimistic side. On the pessimistic side, you can say, hey, if one of those three guys goes down, this offense could be a disaster. You guys have been low on Anthony Richardson and mediocre on CJ Stroud, but there's also a rookie that could be starting for Tennessee in
Will Levis.
Yeah. Thank you, Joey. Will
maybe
Levis.
Even worse.
Yes, exactly. Who, I mean, boy, there's a lot of question marks about his game, and he does not have the same ceiling that Anthony Richardson has. And so I'm glad that we're catching them in week 11 and week 18 next year, because I would much rather play them toward the end of the year, because there's a chance that they come out of the gates pretty hot. They're well coached with Mike Vrabel, but I don't know, like, this is a team that you could tell me they're going to be 12-5. And I'm not going to be that surprised. And then you could also tell me, hey, they have the number one or two pick of the draft, and I'm also not going to be surprised. So this should be a really interesting year for Tennessee.
Yeah, the Titans are the team that here out of the AFC South scare me the most. I would say, for those who are new to the Jaguars bandwagon, also just know we hate the Titans. We perpetually have a rivalry against them. They knocked us out of the playoffs in our best year, 1999. We beat them last year, 2022, in the final game of the season to make it into the playoffs. There's a bit of rivalry, but they do have a lot of talent, a lot of question marks. I have them over that 7.5 wins for sure. 9 wins, maybe 10, sneaking into the playoffs, of course, with us also making the playoffs. But there are question marks. Derrick Henry, obviously being a future Hall of Fame running back, but he's now 29 years old. Is he going to still perform at a high level? Hopkins, obviously, is getting older. He's played a long time in the league. Is he going to be at an elite level or not? So, yeah, that's great analysis, JT. Who knows where they'll finish? I definitely have us over them, but I have them higher than a lot of people at 9, maybe 10 wins.
Whew, you got them high. I got them right at 7.5. I am right at 7-8. I couldn't decide what. How many times have we seen over-the-hill wide receivers go to Tennessee and just not perform?
That's fair.
Like, that's just what happens with Tennessee. And I mean, I think DeAndre Hopkins is actually still very good. And I don't understand what he was kind of thinking, because he said he wanted to go to a team that had a very good quarterback, that was about to win a bunch, and all these other things. But when it came down to it, he took the biggest paycheck. I think he's about to be put out to pasture. He's going to have maybe 2 years there. He'll do fine this year with Tannehill. And then I don't see them holding on to Tannehill past this year. And then he's going to have Will Levis or Malik Willis throwing it to him.
Yuck.
Oh, man, that's disgusting. I mean, I've never seen a team treat their new player so badly than the Tennessee Titans. I went on their social media page, and on OTAs, they're like, Will Levis can't even hit the net. And they show video of him overthrowing their big net. And I'm like, how could you do this to this guy? You just drafted him and you're already trashing him. That just shows you where their backup quarterbacks are. And that's where DeAndre Hopkins wanted to go. It doesn't make sense to me that he would want to go there. It doesn't make sense to me that the Titans wanted him, because I thought they were rebuilding. They didn't sign like anyone this on the free agents, and they let go of a lot of people. It seems like they can't make up their mind.
Yeah, I love the hate on the Titans. So let's do this. We want to track this throughout the year. Let's give our AFC South win predictions for each team. We're going to see who's the closest. Obviously, time will tell. So I'll go first. I'm going to give the Texans 5 wins this year. I think the Colts will wrap up with 7. Again, I'm going to round down and give the Titans 9 wins, and then I'll give the Jaguars 12 wins to take the AFC South.
Yeah, I'm going to go Jaguars win it with 12 to 13 wins. I'm going to say that Tennessee, the wheels come off in the second half of the year, and they finish at 7 wins. I'm going to say the Texans outperform their expectations and also finish with 7 wins. And I think the Colts finish with 5.
Close to you, JT. I got the Jaguars winning it with 13 wins, and then I have it real easy. I got the Texans with 5 wins, Colts with 6, Titans with 7. I think that the Houston Texans are going to start off real bad. They're not going to know what's going on. They're all going to get used to it. And then I think they're going to start at the very end of the year, kind of like we did, and they're going to start winning a little bit. And then the Colts are just going to scrap away to get 6. And then the Titans, who knows, 7.
Okay, well, there are the projections. We are going to put them on our Twitter account. And so make sure you follow us there. We like to interact with you, those who listen and follow along. Give us feedback. We always love to hear that. And so you can hold us accountable. We'll see which of the 3 Jag Bros does the best on their projections for the AFC South. We're going to wrap up here. Again, we love to hear from you. We love your feedback. Hit us up on Twitter at the Jag Bros. And if you would give us a rating and review, that helps us get our podcast out to more and more Jaguars fans, and hopefully extend that far beyond, make the Jaguars fan base bigger and bigger. Again, we just keep getting more and more excited as the season gets closer and closer. We are inching our way to the 2023 Jaguars season. It is going to be amazing. And as we always close here at the Jag Bros, do ball.